We're recording this before the election, but this episode's going to come out after the election. So, fingers crossed, everything turned out pretty well.
If it didn't, we want to go back to this night and drink more vodka and stay here.
Jump in the DeLorean. Jump in the DeLorean. Hello, friends.
Hi, everybody.
And welcome to the Bitchery of History. We switched up a little bit.
We did.
My name's Max.
I'm Allison.
And this week, I'm talking to you about Sophia Brahe.
Ooh, I am excited. I will be talking to you about Eve Ekblad.
Okay. We're both doing Nordic women.
Yup.
Yes.
Hello, Odin.
Hello. Oh. I was too distracted by the accent to like know what you were saying.
I have a theory about myself and accents, if I may have a tangent.
Sure, of course.
Eve's story is pretty short. I have a theory that I can only do one accent at a time. Uh-huh. And what I mean by that is I can only learn and do that accent. So currently I know a Russian accent. So if you ask me to do like an Italian accent after about 5 to 7 words, it sure will just become a Russian accent. Like I have to then get trained in a totally different accent.
I am immigrant to Italy.
Yes. Because there's a great, I mean great, it's a terrible video of me in high school. Uh-huh. I think I'm 17, and I had to learn how to do an Edinburgh Scottish accent for a play. Mm-hmm. So I learned how to do that really well, and then I went and filmed this scene for some people, and they wanted me to do an Italian accent, and my brain is just like
gear smashing, smoke and out the ears.
The sound coming out of my mouth does not belong to a country. It's nothing real. No. It's not Scottish. It's not Italian. It's a disaster.
Now, a question that it's on my mind, yep, and on, I'm sure, many of our listeners' minds, is this video publicly available?
No. No, it's on DVD. I do have it on DVD.
Could we make it publicly available?
But I don't know where that DVD is.
Oh, sure.
It was this television class at NC State, and one time I went and they were filming a scene, either a real scene or a scene that somebody wrote to be a scene from Power Rangers, and they were going to use the green screen, except they didn't email me this, and I literally wore green pants, and they're like, no, you're not going to have any legs.
Yes, I have the no-legged Power Ranger.
Pretty much. It's pretty much what happened. So I do have these all on DVD somewhere. Woo! They are a trip and a half.
Well, listeners, I will make it my mission to see them.
They got to be at my apartment somewhere. Mm-hmm. Anyway, back to Eve.
Yes, Eve.
Eve, yes. She was born to a statesman,
oh,
Count Magnus Julius de la Gardie, and the politician and salonist Hedwig Katharina Lihe.
Say that 5 times fast.
No thanks. She was born on July 10th, 1724. Now, in 1740, Eve was married at the age of 16.
God
classic
bless
at the time.
Mm-hmm, sure.
I'm sure. To Claesson Ekblad. They had 7 children together, 1 son and 6 daughters. Whew, that boy. Now, the marriage was advantageous for both parties.
Okay.
Upon their marriage, Eve's father gave her the estates, which included 2 castles in Vasselgotland. Her husband already owned the Stola Manor estate,
sure,
and a residence in Stockholm.
Mm-hmm. So that's why they had 7 kids. They could afford it.
Well, yeah, that's like 2 kids in every house.
Yeah.
Very doable.
Go to your castle.
I want that to be real.
Same.
Now, quick side note, Eve's sister-in-law was Katharina Charlotte de la Gardie, who we should cover because she invented a smallpox vaccine and intervened to stop Sweden's last witch trial in Dalarna in 1758. We got to do an episode on her.
I think so.
Because I really want to know about this woman, like, probably barging into the courtroom and being like, excuse me? You're trying to do what with who and the evidence is what? Her husband was frequently gone on business, and Eve was given the responsibility of the management of 3 estates. Remember, 2 castles and a manor house.
Yep.
She was described as being imposing and temperamental with great authority. She was fair towards peasantry, but also someone who didn't hesitate to punish wrongdoings during conflicts with local dignitaries.
Sure.
So it sounds like we'd get along.
Firm but fair.
Yeah, she had a leading role in the local aristocracy, and Stola Manor was renowned for its good order. Now, at her home in Stockholm, she hosted a cultural salon. Now, salons, remember, for this time are not hair salons. It's a gathering of the elite with the purpose to please or to educate. A lot of artists go to salons, playwrights, musicians. The wife of the Spanish ambassador said Eve was one of the few aristocratic ladies whose famed honor was considered untainted.
Oh.
And famed Swedish musician Johan Heimlich Rohan had his first concert in Eve's salon.
Wow.
Oh my God. I'm a ghost.
So Allison has a confession to make.
Eve is really Eva. And I've been reading the name wrong for 3 days. So
it's okay. It's currently 8:45.
That is past my bedtime. Way past my bedtime. Well, maybe she went by Eve. Maybe I'm like having a premonition.
There's another language.
From beyond the veil.
Saying Eva, you could still be mispronouncing it. Depending
on
how the...
That's true. Mm-hmm. Well, Eva was great.
Tell me more about her.
In 1746. In 1746. Eva wrote to the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences on her discoveries of how to make flour and alcohol out of potatoes. You heard it right. Eva invented vodka. You're welcome, everyone in the world.
So she's number one in the book.
Basically. So potatoes were introduced into Sweden in 1658, but they'd only been cultivated in greenhouses of the aristocracy. And even then, they were generally just used as food for animals and not people. Fun fact about potatoes and tomatoes, because they come mostly from the New World. A lot of people in the Old World in Europe thought that they were poisonous.
Oh.
For real.
Sure.
So they wouldn't do anything with them. Eva's work turned potatoes into a staple food in Sweden. Not only that, but she proved that they could be used to make alcohol, which freed up the country's supply of wheat, rye, and barley to make more bread. So this discovery by Eva greatly improved the country's eating habits and reduced the frequency of famines. Because, as you all know, when you're facing a famine, you should use all the rye to make alcohol, clearly, and not bread. Like, hashtag priorities. So this method of extracting starch from potatoes to make flour paved the way for vodka distillation. In 1748,
what
at just 24 years old,
she
was over 21, folks, Eva became the first woman elected to the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences. A few years later, though, it was clarified that she was an honorary member rather than a full member, as the full member status was confined to men.
To people with...
Gross. Still, Eva remained the only woman inductee for 200 years until nuclear physicist Lisa Meitner was admitted in 1951.
We've done her, haven't
we? Yeah, I think so. So, woof. Also, I just love that she's like, hey, with these potatoes, you can make some alcohol. And they're like, damn, girl, you better get in the Academy of Sciences.
This bitch is a genius.
Yeah. Do you even know? In 1751, Eva also discovered that with bleaching of cotton textiles and yarns with soap, she found a method to do this using potato flour, which replaced the dangerous ingredients that people were using before. Here's my theory. Eva was left alone by her husband with a shit ton of potatoes and was just like, what can I do with them? Guess I'm gonna drink. What can I do with them? Guess I'm gonna dye some yarn. Now, Eva's husband died in 1771 and she retired to the countryside, but she still kept up her three estates and she was very well liked and well known among all the aristocracy. I mean, duh, she invented vodka. Hello.
Yeah.
How could she not be well liked?
Yeah, she was well known.
This martini is delicious.
They were getting drunk in her salon every other day.
Pretty much. She was offered the position to be the chief lady-in-waiting to the queen, as well as the royal governess to the crown prince, but she turned down both offers due to an illness that left her bedridden for days at a time, which is fair.
Okay.
And she spent the last 6 years of her life in one of her castles, where she continued to be celebrated by the local aristocracy, and she was commemorated by a Google Doodle on July 10th, 2017, on what would have been her 293rd birthday.
Wow.
Now, fun fact.
Uh-huh.
We've discovered that women have invented vodka. I would also yes. like you to know that women invented chocolate chip cookies. So we can get you drunk, and then we can give you excellent snacks after you're drunk.
Mm-hmm.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Okay, tell me about... Is it Sophie or Sophia? Let's Sophia. Be clear before we start.
It is Sophia Brahe, yep. born either August 24th, 1559, or September 22nd, 1556. We're not 100% sure.
Wow, those are both weirdly specific, though.
They're weirdly specific because the reason we have those two dates is because yeah. both of those dates exactly match the horoscope made specifically for Sophia by her brother, Tycho Brahe. They made horoscopes at a certain point.
Huh.
And so we're not exactly sure when she was born. In fact, a lot of the information that we have from Sophia, it's very sparse.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the information we have on her comes from comments made in writings by other people about
right.
her.
Right. Okay. Okay.
So she is the youngest of 10 children. Her brother, Tycho, is the oldest of the 10 children. And he's 10 years her senior.
Okay.
Now, their parents, Otto Brahe, Otto was an advisor to the king. And
ooh la la.
Beatie Bille Brahe was the leader of the royal household for Queen Sophia.
All right.
Excuse me, Queen Sophie. At first, her parents discouraged intellectual pursuits, saying that it was not really something that the gentry should be engaging in.
Eye roll.
But when her brother goes off to college, there was nothing that they could do to stop him from studying astronomy. Upon his return, it was actually Tycho that taught Sophia horticulture and chemistry, but told her actually that she shouldn't study astronomy and didn't go out of his way to teach her or do anything to help teach her. But
yeah, because he wanted to keep it for himself.
Exactly.
That's how older brothers are.
But not to be put off, she began studying it on her own.
Yeah.
She read astronomical books in German, and she used her own money to have those books that were written in Latin translated so that she could read them.
Whoa.
Now, her brother's reaction to this was actually one of joy and happiness. And we know this.
He knew what he was doing.
Because
he knew.
He invited her to his island to study.
His island?
Now, just wait.
Please.
Now, let me explain this for a second. Now, the king of Denmark had given the island of Hven, that's Hven, to Tycho, on which to do his observations because he would be unimpeded by light.
I got to move to Denmark.
And on this island, this no longer stands, but he built this big, not really an observatory because there were no telescopes in it. Tycho Brahe was one of the last of the of those that did not use telescopes.
Okay.
Invited her to this island. Mm-hmm. It was named Uraniburg, and Uranus is the goddess of astronomy, of the stars.
Oh, okay.
And Sophia helps him with his observations and his data collection. Now, we know in particular that she helps him during a supernova, which occurred in November of 1572, and during the lunar eclipse of 1573, when she was 13 and 14, respectively.
Wow.
Right. She's very young at this point. Because there's so little information on Sophia, I kind of wanted to delve into why Sophia is so important, even though we know so little. The reason Sophia is important is exactly the same reason that Tycho is important.
Mm-hmm.
In ancient times, if we talk about Ptolemy, who was like the first great astronomer, he believed and he theorized that all of the Earth was at the center of the universe.
Right.
And that we were surrounded by what were known as spheres. Mm-hmm. And the spheres were perfect, right?
Right.
The stars were all on one, and each planet was on its own sphere around it. And this was a view of the cosmos that existed for about 2,000 years until a man named Copernicus put the sun at the center of the galaxy.
Right.
Now, Copernicus had the idea, but did not have the data to back it up. It is Tycho and Sophia who gather the data. Now, Tycho creates his own view of
the universe.
The universe and how it's, and it's not exactly correct.
Okay.
But much later in his life, Tycho would bring on an assistant by the name of Johannes Kepler, who was the first person to not only put the sun at the center of our galaxy, but using the data and the observations collected by Sophia and Tycho.
That's so cool. I know that name. Proved Kepler. It.
Kepler. And of course, yeah. So Kepler's thing was that he correctly not only envisioned the structure of the galaxy,
yeah,
but he supported it with observations and with data. But his big thing was that he knew that the Earth and all the planets and everything in the galaxy was acted upon by a force emanating from the sun.
Wow.
But he did not know what that force was.
Okay.
So, of course, next comes Newton, who creates right. the theory of gravity, and then Einstein, who creates the theory of special relativity.
Wow.
So the data and the observations collected by Tycho and assisted influentially by Sophia are bedrock.
The foundations of science.
Foundations of how we understand the universe and our place in it as human beings on
That's
the planet Earth.
That's crazy.
The supernova mm-hmm. is particularly important here because this Ptolemaic view of the universe theorized that, so you had the Earth and the moon, right?
Yeah.
And these spheres were meant to be impenetrable. There was right. nothing could go through them because they were perfectly
perfect.
Perfectly perfect.
Right.
Right. And so when the supernova goes off, they measure where it is and they measure what's known as the parallax, which is look at something close to you and then move your head 6 inches. The distance that that object that you're looking at moves from side
right.
to side, that's
okay.
that's the angle of parallax.
Okay.
And if you know both of those measurements,
right.
you can figure out using right. some math that I have no idea how it works, you can
where
figure out how
is.
Far away yeah. something is. Exactly.
Okay.
And so using those calculations, Tycho correctly surmised that the supernova was happening past the moon. And if Ptolemy was correct, that should not be possible.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So it's like, so it, when we say that, when I say that really this is bedrock stuff, this is bedrock stuff. Tycho Brahe actually refers to her in writing, refers to her, quote, animus invictus, or determined mind. He actually refers to her again in 1594. He writes this poem where he casts her actually as Urania, as Uranus, the
right.
muse of astronomy, which is seen by most historians as another suggestion of his respect for her pursuits.
Yeah.
And actually, there's a poet in the 19th century who's quoted as saying, quote, Denmark must never forget the noble woman who, in spirit, much more than flesh and blood, was Tycho Brahe's sister. The shining star in our Danish heaven is indeed a double one.
Wow. I just got chills. Oh my gosh.
So 1576 rolls around. She marries a man named Otto Thott. She's either 16 or 13 at this time, depending on
right.
when she was born. And he's 33.
Okay.
She moves onto his estate at Eriksholm, which is actually a property that still exists to this day, although these days it's known as Trollholm, mm-hmm. Trolleholm Castle. And they had a son together in 1580 before Otto died in March of 1588.
Mm.
When her husband dies, it falls, of course, to Sophia to care for the estate until her son can come of age
right.
To take care of the property himself. And she actually manages not only to keep it profitable, but during this time, she continues her studies in chemistry and medicine, and she dives deeper into horticulture as well.
Mm.
She is particularly interested in this strain of medicine that deals with taking very small amounts of poison and believes
yeah.
that poison in small doses can actually help heal the body.
Yeah.
And so she not only grows the plants, but she also uses her newfound skills to treat the local village, to treat the people who live around and on her estates.
Nice.
And actually, the gardens at Eriksholm during this time are said to have grown magnificently under her care.
Of course.
I mean, right?
Yeah.
So throughout this time, Sophia had actually been traveling back and forth to visit her brother on this island. And it was on one of these trips that Sophia actually meets a friend of Tycho's. His mm-hmm. name is Erik Lang, who is actually a nobleman, ends up making 13 separate trips in 1 year to Uraniburg and eventually actually gets engaged to Eric Lang.
Ooh.
Over the objections of her family.
Ooh.
Now, unfortunately, Lang's alchemy had eaten up the vast majority of his fortune. So much so that they didn't end up marrying for 12 years.
Holy cow!
Because he had to go on the run to avoid his debtors.
What? Whoa.
Yeah, we're entering a kind of an unfortunate period in her life because he ends up in Germany looking for new patrons, and Sophia actually joins him in 1599.
Yikes.
And when they marry in 1602, they are both living in effective poverty. I mean, relative poverty.
Right.
And Sophia actually writes in a letter to her sister. This is a very long letter. In fact, it's known to this day as one of the like prime examples of long form letter writing during this period in history.
Right.
So she writes in this letter that she was made to wear stockings with holes in them.
Oh.
And that she was made to return her wedding clothes to the pawn shop where they'd gotten them because they could not afford to keep them.
Wow.
Yeah. She expresses also in this letter frustration at her parents for depriving her of a source of income that she felt was due to her. And most sources suggest that they did this because they continued to disapprove of her scientific studies. And also, of course, of the marriage as
Lame.
Well. I completely agree.
The marriage is like, whatever, have your own opinions. But the scientific studies is major lame.
Really? For real,
That's
though.
A critical yikes.
I mean, we talk so much throughout all of the women praising the parents who were instrumental in these women's pursuits. And it's just unfortunate.
Yep.
Now, Eric actually dies in Prague in 1613.
Oy.
And when Sophia returns to Denmark, she's only allowed to return to Denmark without having to worry about any of the debtors after she disclaims his debts and promises not to lay claim to any of his inheritance.
Hmm.
Whatever, I guess, might have been left to it.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. That being said, after Eric's death, we have evidence that Sophia personally paid for the restoration of the local church, which was named Ivatofta Kyrka.
Huh.
And we know this, and the evidence for this is that the lid for her unused sarcophagus remains in the church to this day. It's in their armory.
Whoa.
And so this is a point where the history actually kind of confused me in my research a little bit.
Yeah.
Because we have evidence of her personally paying to restore this church.
Right.
But we also have evidence that during this time she was
poor.
Very poor.
I guess maybe poor is a relative term.
So, exactly. Sophia does return. She returns to Denmark in 1613. She settles on the island of Zealand in Helsingør.
Okay.
And fun fact, I did not realize that there was an island named Zealand.
Yeah, that's why there's new Zealand.
Yeah, I realize that now.
I mean, I guess I never really thought about it, but it does make sense.
Yeah, and I looked at it and I literally had a V8 moment where I popped the top of my head. And it's here in the final chapter of her life where she produces another great work. She actually produces the thing that she's most well known concretely for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a book called The Sligte Bog, which literally means family history book. And I'm sure I just completely mangled that.
It's fine.
But it's published in 1626, and it's a 900-page genealogical record of 60 families belonging to the Dutch nobility.
Whoa.
To this day,
I gotta take a nap.
This work is considered a foundational record of early history of Denmark in the Danish nobility. And in fact, it can reasonably be argued that without this work, we probably would not know about a fair number of those contained within it at all.
Wow.
At all.
That's crazy.
Sophia died in Helsingør in 1643. She was either 84 or 87.
Okay, it's a good life either way.
She's buried in the Thott burial plot, that's T-H-O-T-T, the family plot, at the Torlusa Old Church, which is now actually in southern Sweden.
Fun fact.
It was Denmark at the time when she was living there. And although that particular church did not survive the 19th century, her gravestone did.
Wow.
And it still stands to this day.
Pretty cool.
And that is Sophia Brahe.
I like it.
Yeah.
If you enjoy finding out about people you've never heard of, and you probably never thought about where vodka came from, but now you know, it's thanks to a woman.
Mm-hmm.
If you enjoy that, help other people find this podcast and learn new incredible things every other week. You can do that by simply leaving us a rating or a review on whatever platform you're listening on.
Also, if you're looking for some cool swag from the podcast, if you're looking for some stickers in particular,
yep,
you can find those on the shop at thebitcheryofhistory.com.
We're getting close to Thanksgiving in America, anyway. Mm-hmm. And so our cause of the week that we want to highlight this week is Feeding America, which is a great nonprofit. What they do is, you know, feed America, basically. If you look up Feeding America on those like nonprofit ranking things, it's always ranked very, very high, look FYI. At that. Their mission is to feed America's hungry through a nationwide network of member food banks and engage our country in the fight to end hunger. Thanks for listening to another episode. We couldn't have made this one happen without our incredible team. Sydney.
Jeanette.
Kim.
And Jess.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As always,
bitches get stuff done.